Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's up, my fellow ghost ganderers? Welcome to the Warped Reality Podcast bonus episode. I'm your host, Ghost Joe. So the reason for this episode is to showcase and celebrate my segment contributors, namely Edgegrave Dave for his horrible review segment, Chris Whitehouse for his White House investigation segment, and there is a new kid on the block. I am very pleased and excited to introduce my newest segment host, John Wright. He's going to be having a segment called The Right Headspace. So if you guys remember, John was my guest on the Christmas episode this past Christmas, and because I had gotten such great feedback, and because he's awesome, and between you and me, I've actually had this idea since I first met the guy at the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum, so I'd asked him if he'd like to be a part of the show, and he graciously agreed, which I'm very, very happy about. He's a very knowledgeable guy, and my favorite part is that he is a realist. So I'm not going to take up much time of myself throughout this episode. It's all about the Warped Reality Podcast family, everybody. So let's kick this show off with John Wright's debut segment about the Chiles Whitted incident. Let's go.
Thank you, Joe. I can't tell you how honored I was when you interviewed me and that was your Christmas episode. And then I was even more honored when you asked me to come on and start doing the segment for your show. For those people that listen to the Christmas episode, you know who I am. My name is John Wright. For those that did not, I'll give you a quick summary. I am a high school social studies teacher in Orange County, New York. I am a father, a husband, a coach. I do some investigations in regards to the paranormal. I also am a MUFON investigator. Yes, you heard me correctly. I am an official UFO investigator. In addition to that, I also do tours at the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum here in Orange County, New York. As far as the segment is concerned, when I was asked to do the segment, I was kind of like, okay, what's the topics and what are the things that I can really talk about here? I'm going to tend to focus on some of the UFO stuff. And I'm also going to take a look at some cryptid things along the way. One of my favorite cryptids, Bigfoot, so you'll probably see that pop up a few times along the way here. as long as Joe asked me to come back after this one. Today's segment is going to deal with what we refer to as the Chiles Whitted incident. This occurred back in July 24th, 1948. So just to kind of set the scene for you, during this time frame, you have a number of incidents that take place. One of them included the Kenneth Arnold sighting, which occurred in June of 1947. You have the quote-unquote crash at Roswell, which occurs in July of 1947. Shortly after that, you have the Thomas Mantell case, in which his plane had crashed while chasing after a UFO, and that occurs in January of 1948. So as a result of all those different incidents, UFOs are kind of in the public consciousness and were being seen throughout the country. This particular case deals with an Eastern Airlines DC-3. It was piloted by Captain Clarence Chiles and co-piloted by John Whitted. They were flying over Montgomery, Alabama, and they were en route to Atlanta, Georgia when the incident occurred. According to the reports, the plane was flying at an altitude of roughly about 5,000 feet, and for the most part, it was clear skies. They did report, though, that there were small clusters of clouds that hovered above the aircraft at roughly about 6,000 feet, but those were kind of far and few between. As they flew along, Captain Chiles had spotted what he thought was a U.S. Army jet. His quote to his co-pilot was, "Look, here comes one of those Army jobs," believing it to be one of the new Army jets. As they flew along, the object seemed to be on a direct path for them. Chiles at that point decided that he was going to take evasive action, steered his plane to the left. One of the comments that they made is that as they turned left, the object also seemed to turn to its left. So it looked like it was veering so that it could avoid the DC-3. According to the pilots, the incident took somewhere around 5 to 10 seconds. Shortly after arriving in Atlanta, both pilots and one passenger gave reports to the U.S. Air Force. The one passenger that did give a report was labeled as C.L. McKelvey. The reason why there was only one passenger report is because this took place late at night and most of the passengers on the plane were sleeping at the time. Based on the report, we can't really get a tremendous amount of information from McKelvey. The only statement that he made was that he saw a bright light, that it was streaking across the sky, and there was no real discernible shape in regards to what it looked like. Childs and Woodit, when they submitted their reports, they also submitted sketches with the reports as far as similarities and differences. I came up with a short list of similarities. I'll hit those first and we'll go to the discrepancies right after that. In regards to similarities, both pilots believed that the object was cigar-shaped. Somewhere along the way in one of the reports, it's claimed that it was the shape of a B-29, like the fuselage of a B-29. In addition to that, the object seemed to be moving at a speed of 500 to 700 miles per hour. As the object passed by them, both pilots reported that they could hear no noise as the object passed. Both of them claimed to see what they thought was windows along the side of the craft. Both agreed that they did not feel any type of air disturbance or what you might call prop wash from the object passing by. The last item of agreement was both agreed that the object was approximately 100 feet in length and close to 30 feet in diameter. In regards to the differences, you can always look this up online and you can find pictures of the sketches that were submitted. Both pilots disagreed on the number of windows and sort of the layout of the wing. When you look at Child's sketch, what you'll see is a cockpit, a boom, which is kind of like a small arm that reaches out from the front of the craft. Woodit did not claim to see a cockpit, did not claim to see a boom. Childs claimed that the fuselage of the craft was transparent and had small blue lights that were kind of dotted all along the fuselage of the craft. Woodit's sketch showed two rows of windows. There were three along the top of the fuselage and then three windows that were directly below that. Childs believed that as the object passed, he saw a nozzle on the back of it, and he believed that the flames were kind of coming out of this nozzle. If you look at the sketch, you'll see it looks sort of similar to a rocket or a missile of that time frame. Whereas Woodit believed the whole entire end, the rear end of the craft was emitting the flames as it was going by. Childs believed that the craft had passed within 700 feet of the airliner, whereas Woodit believed that it was well over a half mile away from it. When the Air Force did a follow-up, they checked into other airline flights, they checked into military flights. They were trying to see if they can find something that fit into the time frame and the location of where these guys were located, and if possibly one of these other objects could have been the quote-unquote craft that they had seen. Based on the information, the Air Force had come up with 200 different flights that they thought kind of fit the criteria. But out of all of them, there's only one that they believed that came close. It was still miles away, so it doesn't necessarily fit into that half mile if we go by what Woodit had said. The craft that they claimed was a C-47 military plane. It was actually flying in the opposite direction, which would sort of fit the direction that they believed the craft that they had spotted was going in. But unfortunately, as I said before, it didn't necessarily fit into that distance that separated the two supposed craft. One of the people that was brought in on this is Jayon Hynek. He was a consultant for the Air Force on Project Sign. What he believed was that these two pilots had seen a meteor that was streaking across the sky. He based his information on reports that he received from amateur astronomers that had seen over that time frame, I think it was the 23rd and the 24th, where there was a large number of reports in regards to meteors that were streaking across the sky. The head of Project Sign, and unfortunately it doesn't really mention a specific person here, so I went online, I looked it up. One of the men that would have been closely associated with Jayon Hynek and was kind of responsible for the project is a gentleman by the name of Colonel Harold McCoy. He disagreed with Hynek's conclusion. He stated that it's obvious that this object was not a meteor. I believe the director made this statement because he had read the information that had come from Childs and Woodit. One of the things that we hear a lot in this business is The object seemed to display, quote unquote, intelligent control. The intelligent control comes in with this particular case because as they veered away from the object, it seemed as if the object had veered away and pulled up slightly in an attempt to try and avoid them. In the end, the gentleman that was in charge of the project came to the conclusion that he believed that it was, in fact, something that was unidentified. So that brings me to, could Hynek be correct? Is there evidence that supports his point of view? And I'm going to say yes. One of the things that I found is that there was another Eastern Airlines flight that was passing through that general area. The flight is labeled number 573. Flight 573 was passing over North Carolina when it spotted what they referred to as a tail. They said it had appeared, and as it was shooting across the sky, it left a trail in the sky similar to what you might see with a jet plane or with a rocket, and supposedly traveling at terrific speed. So if we go back to the previous report, we hear that same exact phrase. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of detail that comes out of this, but in my mind, it leaves sort of this indelible image of an object that's streaking across the sky. I know just from sitting outside when we have all the different meteor showers that pass through, I can see them as they shoot across the sky. They're there for a split second, and then they disappear. Is there any additional support for Hynek's conclusion? Well, yeah, you have what is referred to as the Delta Aquarian meteor showers that occur during the month of July, and usually hitting its peak at the very end of July. In addition to this, there's another case that occurred in March of 1968. A number of people reported from a number of different states that they had seen something that was kind of shooting across the sky in the upper atmosphere. As the object flew along, they reported seeing two smaller objects that appeared behind the larger object. As they were flying along, it looked like they were flying in formation. You had two smaller craft that were flying behind what was in some cases referred to as a mothership. What they discovered from this is that there was actually a Soviet launch that had occurred in early March, and they found out that this was the rocket booster, which, as it was re-entering the atmosphere, had broken up into three separate pieces, and the streak across the sky was not necessarily rocket boosters, but was the objects themselves burning up in the atmosphere. In conclusion, all too often, we tend to refer to people as highly trained observers because they come from a particular background, whether policemen, military pilots, or any other one that you want to substitute in there. In the end, we are human, unless, of course, you think Giorgio Tsoulakis is correct in that we are the illegitimate love children of aliens and apes. I tend not to. So if we are human, that means we make mistakes. That means it's possible that we may see something ordinary in an extraordinary way. And the unusual nature of whether it's the object being caught off guard, the timing, the unusual circumstances of the situation can really throw you off your game. When you're under stress, we know for a fact that you do not see things correctly, you cannot hear things correctly, and over time, your memory or what you think of that particular situation is going to fade. Combine this with the idea of people that believe strongly in these things, the hope, the longing, the belief that aliens, UFOs, and UAP are real, will have a tremendous impact on how you perceive or interpret a situation. My hope for this segment is that it will pique your curiosity, that it will encourage you to do your own investigations on these topics. And in doing so, hopefully that will leave you in the right headspace. Thank you, Joe. Hopefully you'll have me on again, and I'm going to kick it back to you.
Thanks so much, John. And you know why I love this segment so much? It's that when you're dealing with what may seem to be supernatural, you have to investigate more. You know, don't just go right to, it's a ghost, it's got to be a ghost. It may be something completely different. Our senses are easily fooled, especially if it's your brain trying to fool you. So now let's get on with our next segment. This guy has been with me for a little bit longer than John, like from the beginning of freaking time. I'm talking about Edgegrave Dave with his horrible review. So let's go, Edgegrave.
Horrible reviews with Edgegrave Dave.
Hey, what's up, fellow grave diggers? Edgegrave Dave is here. And at the time of this recording, it is the wee hours of the morning. And before the morning sun has vanquished this horrible night inside this crypt, and I do take my final dirt nap of the day, well, that is just sometimes the price you gotta pay. Or rather, the name of the film that we will be discussing is The Price We Pay, from 2023. And this has been a special request from John Wright, who I want to give a special shout out to. We're glad to have him, and he does it all. So without further ado, let's get into it. So, if you're ready to pay, The Price We Pay was directed by Ryuhei Kitamura, written by Christopher Jolly, starring Stephen Dorff, Emil Hirsch, Gigi Zumbato, and Tyler Sanders, also with Amazon Eve, and we'll get into her character. Just on a somber note, I did see in the credits at the end of the movie that Tyler Sanders did play a character of the young boy Danny, and he had recently died in June of last year as a direct result of drug abuse with fentanyl. If you know anybody or if you have an issue yourself and substance abuse, guys, I can't stress enough, always try to reach out for help when you can. And there is actually a substance abuse and mental health services hotline called the SAMHSA. Their number is 1-800-662-4357. They have both English and Spanish speaking counselors who can provide referrals to treatment facilities and support groups in your area. So certainly here to help. Within this cast of characters, one of the cast members that I recognized immediately was Stephen Dorff. I certainly do remember him back in the day from Blade. He's actually in one of my favorite, now this is a non-horror film called SFW, which is actually one of the debut acting roles of Reese Witherspoon. So excellent film there. Emil Hirsch, I do actually remember him from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which came out recently. And guys, we have got to talk about Amazon Eve, who plays this crazy creature. So here we go. Spoiler alert, who just, I don't know when it happens, but she just apparently has a really hard time dying. This movie to me has so many levels of kind of like mixed ideas and things kind of done in sort of a conglomerate way. I'm seeing a little bit of some Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which by the way, Stephen Dorff did actually play in a recent release in the Texas Chainsaw series called Leatherface, which came out some years ago. It gave me actually kind of like a Saw vibe, and the reason for that is because the grandfather of the crazy family reveals how, you know, organs are like wasted and, you know, you should only use what you need and things like that and give people that need them. So definitely that. And actually, I noticed a lot of kind of a From Dusk Till Dawn presence to it, too. You know, you have these three guys that are criminals here. Actually, there's a fourth one, but the getaway car got away. And after they're robbing a freaking pawn shop, they take Gigi Zumbato's character, Grace, hostage. And all while they're trying to get away, oh, man, they find a farm. While there's a barricade up and there's cops and the car breaks down, and they go to the young boy Danny, who's working in the farm. Hey, we need a place to crash, we need a place to stay. And of course, you know, they have no intention, especially Emil Hirsch's character Alex, who's is freaking crazy and just wants to kill everyone. They don't have any chance of really sparing anybody. But Stephen Dorff's character Cody is a little bit more level-headed. You know, it appears that he just wants to get the job done. And Emil Hirsch's character Alex and his brother in the movie want to pay off their boss. But what they discover is there is something that is not freaking right going on in this house. And we have an absolute crazy family. And you discover that there's all these cells where they're keeping people, medical equipment, surgical equipment. Something's been going on. And then the story takes a rapid turn to people that you think are the bad guys. Well, they became hostages themselves. And oh, man. The things that they try to do. Now, in the kind of the short 86-minute runtime of this movie, I mean, there's certainly the execution of it I felt could have been a little bit better. I mean, guys, there's organs that are taken out. You know, there's sort of these monologues by the grandfather as to why it's, you know, happening, why it's being done. And then all of a sudden, you have Amazon Eve's character, Jody, who is just this freaking like Leatherface type lady. She's like super strong. I mean, in real life, she's like over 6 feet tall, and she's just freaking like unstoppable for like a good, you know, end climax here of X amount of minutes. And they're shooting her freaking tranquilizer darts, and that won't stop her. I mean, they, not to give too much away here, they wrap her up in freaking barbed wire, and oh man, it's just like the end to me, guys. It was just like nonstop, just, you know, beat by beat, kind of like action packed with horror and blood. But it's just like one of these movies where I think it wanted to be several different things. And in that, I think it does suffer from some plot development. This was a limited release that was back in January here, whenever that this comes out. And then as of right now, it is a straight to VOD. That still seems like a futuristic technological term to me, where you are able to view the movie that way. But I would definitely say check it out. It does have a lot of different elements. You know, there is kind of some cheesiness to it. You know, there's, you know, some interesting lines here, and there's just a whole lot of blood. I mean, there's eyeballs, there's all kinds of things that are going on in this movie. But again, you know, I would have liked to see, I mean, not that this is like Shakespeare here or anything like that, but I would have liked to see a little bit more plot development, maybe some more backstory, just something that was a bit more like in depth. But certainly not a bad movie, something that will kind of keep you guessing, keep you entertained. And I do rate this one a 2.5 out of 5 graves. So once again, John, thank you very much for the recommendation. Happy to do that here. And I hope you guys have a frightful rest of your day. Now back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thank you for that awesomely horrible review, my friend. And yes, if you're having substance abuse problems, please reach out for help. Call the number Edgegrave mentioned or reach out to a family member or a friend. Now, let's get on with some White House investigations with Mr. Chris Whitehouse, and take it away, Chris.
In this episode, I would like to play you another clip from our YouTube page, and we were sat in a cellar, myself and Lucy of my team, with two of our friends. So there's only four of us. I have control of the whole building, and it's now used as a dog place where people take their dogs to be looked after through the day, like a daycare, if you will. There's tubes for them to run through and toys to play with. And down in a second cellar room, there are things that they're not using right now, such as two long blue tubes that dogs can run through. One of the tubes has a third short tube glued to it, completely attached. Now, we had planned on doing a Ouija board session in there, so I had kind of propped up these blue tubes and I was upstairs setting up when I heard them fall over, made people jump and thought, hey, I know what those are. I shouted down, are those tubes falling over? Oh yeah, they just fell over. Don't worry about it. I thought that might happen. So debunked, you know, they jumped, but no big deal. So then I left them down because I didn't want that happening again. We were in an adjacent large area later on, just the four of us. And we'd had the Ouija board going for some time, but it wasn't giving the best results. So I decided we'd try something we'd been talking about, which was to just go really old school, link hands and ask for noises or sightings, anything. And we'd barely started when two loud bangs on the plastic tubes in the other room rang out and I jumped. I'll be absolutely honest, because I've never before that moment heard a noise that was in no doubt unexpected and therefore I would say paranormal. Somebody had to be slapping on those tubes, and yet we were all accounted for. We were all holding hands. It was both exhilarating and amazing. And I play you that audio now.
You ready to join hands and warm each other up a bit? Yeah. Okay, so rest hands on the table. Okay, everyone comfortable?
Sorry for now? I'm sorry if I'm putting
weight. It's fine. Okay. So now we've joined hands. We know we're not doing any. We know we're not doing any.
So yeah, if you can imagine being in your own house and that happens in another room when you know everyone's in the room with you, it was pretty terrifying. Anyway, hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you in another one.
Wow, that actually made me jump out of my seat. And I don't even have the volume on. That was crazy, man. If you guys enjoyed that clip, there's plenty more where that came from on the White House Investigations YouTube channel. Also, check out Chris's paranormal interview channel called Talking Paranormal and his book called Into the Darkness, Becoming a Ghost Hunter, available on Amazon. He's also recently updated his merch store with some new stuff, so check out that as well. All the links to everything mentioned are in the show notes as always. So that's going to do it for me, everybody, for this wonderful Warp Reality podcast bonus episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And please stay tuned for the next episode premiering on Valentine's Day, which is the Valentine's Day special. Got a lot of things planned for that. You're going to love it. And yeah, so have a great week, everybody. Have a great few days, I guess, from being when you're going to listen to this. And as always, stay spooky. Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Podcast, and thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warprealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.